Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome one and all to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, Kansas. My name is Stephen Mall, longtime member, and unfortunately for you, convening this morning. There's an old saying that luck is when preparedness meets opportunity. Well, we're going to find out what happens when unpreparedness meets. We've been working on our house, Mom and I, to sell for the last couple weeks. And we have an open house today, and we worked most of the day yesterday, concrete on the driveway and working in the garden. And I said, well, we'll get up early this morning and get everything ready. I was not prepared for the vacuum cleaner at 5 a.m. Thank you, Mom. Oh, excuse me. So welcome, everybody, once again. Today is going to be a special presentation by a good friend on spirituality in everyday life. And I just wanted to start with a comment on pretty much spirituality on everyday life. When you think about the innumerable number of coincidences or things that had to come together from the beginning of time to this present moment for us to even be here, trillions upon trillions of little accidents that if anyone had gone the other way, this wouldn't have been happening. We wouldn't be here. So the miracle, truly, whether you're a spiritual person or strictly atheist, doesn't matter. It's still a miracle. And I'd like for each of us to turn and welcome the person next to you. And bearing in mind, not to be too maudlin about it, but things happen. Things happened this week to remind us that we never know when each of us will be here and when we won't. And just greet everybody with the realization that it may be the last time you ever see them. Okay, that's enough. I would like to call your attention to the announcements printed in the order of service. And since nobody has presented me with any other announcements, are there any pressing issues that need to be? All right. If you will stand and join us as you are able in singing hymn number 94, What Is This Life? Thank you, that was lovely. Moving right along, it's time for the joys and concerns, if anyone has something they need to share or feel they would like. We'll bring the microphone, if you'll just wait one moment.
have a concern. My dog, Charlotte, died.
Wow. Sorry to make a habit of this. My name is Tom Phillips, and my dog, Honey, died. 15 years old. I got the message from my ex-wife. She passed away early this morning. We rescued her from the pound in Stillwater, Oklahoma. She was the run of the litter, flea-bitten, full of worms, and a mixed terrier. Her name was based on her color, Honey, and we loved her a lot.
This may sound ridiculous, but I'm really happy that I read Joe Klein in the middle of the night, and he explained the whole Bain controversy, which is very legitimate, and I'm very happy because I have an argument now to give people.
Everybody see Ruth after the program. Very good. As I said, the topic of this morning's talk is going to be spirituality and memory lapses. One of the splinter areas of that is going to be a gratitude, or the attitude of gratitude. And I went to my source of wisdom, the font of knowledge, the Google. And I found an article from a website, Happy Life You, How Can You Go Wrong? So the title is An Attitude of Gratitude, a Powerful Source of Happiness. What is gratitude? Gratitude is expressing thanks for gifts we have received. According to Merriam-Webster's online dictionary, the word gratitude comes from Latin words gratia, meaning favor, charm, and thanks, and gratis, meaning pleasing and grateful. The Latin words are similar to the Sanskrit word gamati, meaning he praises. Gratitude is a basic human emotion, is expressed in some way by all ancient and modern cultures. According to Dr. Robert Emmons, a leading gratitude researcher and author of the book Thanks, the idea of receiving a gift is central to the concept of gratitude. While merely appreciating something for its positive qualities does have a positive impact on our lives and emotions, gratitude takes the next step beyond. Gratitude happens when we go beyond just appreciating something to acknowledging that we have received a gift we did nothing to earn or necessarily to deserve. On some level, the warm emotional rush we feel when we really feel gratitude is very like the glow we feel from realizing we are unconditionally loved. New research shows that practicing gratitude may be the fastest single pathway to happiness, health, long life, and prosperity. In a remarkable study performed by Dr. Emmons, people who kept a gratitude journal for just 3 weeks measured 25% higher on life satisfaction afterwards. They exercised more, drank alcohol less, and their families and friends noticed they were nicer to be around. The effects lasted for several months beyond the initial 3-week study. Other studies on gratitude are confirming these results. People who take the time to notice and appreciate the good things that come their way through grace or luck or the goodness of others are happier and more peaceful. They do better on cognitive tests and tests of problem-solving skills. They practice healthier habits, have better relationships, are more optimistic, and live longer. Gratitude is one powerful emotion. The children's conversation today is going to be told by Barbara Bascom, a Romanian hero's tale. Dr. Barbara Bascom. And if all the children would like to come up and join her, please.
You have to stay there.
I do.
You're going to be the king.
I'm going to be the king. Typecasting.
Actually, he was a prince.
Of course.
He
Sigismund. Isn't that a nice name, Sigismund? And I'm going to sit in the chair. Now, don't read those yet. Okay, today we're going to go, when we go back to your classroom, we're going to go to, I'm going to take you to Romania. It's a country that I lived in for a long time, and I worked in the big houses where the orphans lived. And so I have lots of little friends that are still in Romania, and they're getting older than you guys. This is a tale of a Unitarian church hero from Romania. Now, it's a story that started many, many years ago, almost 500 years ago. Is anybody here good at math? What would that be? That would be 1500 something, wouldn't it? Okay, so in 1500... In 16, I believe, there was a king in Romania, and he's standing up there. And there was a major church that was sort of like the official church. But then there were many other religions, like the Catholics and the Lutherans and the Calvinists. And there were Unitarians who had run away to Romania, and in Romania, the state there where they lived was Transylvania. Have any of you heard of Transylvania? Some people know Transylvania because that's where Dracula was supposed to be from. You ever heard of Dracula? We're not going to talk about Dracula. Maybe later. Anyway, there was a big argument between all of the religions. It was a time of reform, and not everyone wanted to be Orthodox, but everyone except the Unitarians believed in the Trinity. Do you know what the Trinity is? Have you ever been to a Catholic church, or have you ever seen someone do like this? You know what they're saying to themselves when they do that? They're saying, in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, Amen. And the Trinity is the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost. And all religions except the Unitarians believed that there were three gods in one, and that was God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit. And that's what they believed, and you could see, and they had lots of saints and paintings on their churches, and this was all accepted. But then came the Unitarians, who had started many years before, and they were not accepted by the public and by any governments, and they had to run away. They were arrested. They were thrown in prison. They were tortured, and sometimes they were killed in terrible ways, like cutting their heads off or burning them. And so they were very afraid, but they also had heroes who were very courageous. And one of them was named Francis David, and he convinced the king to have a debate. Do you know what a debate is? We're seeing lots of them on TV these days. It was like a big political debate, and the debate was between Francis David, and I won't make anyone be that, and the Bishop Peter Melias, who was defending the Trinity, and the king was impartial, supposedly, and he had three questions, and I'm going to ask you all to help me when I tell you what the answers to the questions were. And what did the king ask?
The king asked, "Some believe that disagreement and war will begin if we allow Unitarianism to be free in society. Do you?"
And David answered that if Unitarianism was allowed, that they weren't asking that people believed like Unitarians, but just that they allowed them to believe that way. And that's what we called, you know a word for that? Tolerance. That's what we call tolerance. And the other man said, if we allow Unitarians to run in the streets and have churches and have meetings, then we will have war amongst us because we believe so differently. And when he said that, okay, there was a second question.
Now that we've settled that, should the kingdom's government control or regulate what churches do, punish their wrongdoing, or kill them as heretics?
You have a question?
A comment.
Yeah.
This is kind of like the Jews in Egypt, where the Egyptians were killing the Jews over their religion. And this is similar to that.
It was. It was very similar. Did you all hear him? He said this was like the Jews in Egypt when the Egyptians were killing the Jews because of their beliefs. And it's exactly the same thing. The bishop said we should, because heretics are taking refuge in Transylvania. They're running away here. Our streets will be full of them. And we have to treat them the same way that Christians are treating them in the other countries of Europe where they've run away from. We have to arrest them. We have to put them in prison. And David said, this is not a debate about what we believe, and we only want to be able to exist with freedom. And we're not trying to make other people believe what we believe. And and the third question?
What does this religious debate have to do with the government?
And what the king and what the the bishop said, it should have everything. The government should have complete control. And what David said was it shouldn't have anything to do with the government. It could be regulated in some way, but it shouldn't have anything to do with the government. And he said something that was really beautiful, and all Unitarians, especially in Romania, they remember these words. He said, we need not think alike to love alike, so we can love each other. And so I lost my opponent. You should cheer now. Cheers. So the end of that story is good because the prince declared David, Francis David, who had a lot of courage because he could have been arrested and burned up or something terrible, but he stood up there and talked about being a Unitarian and how important that was, and he won the debate. And that was the good part of the story. It wasn't the end of the trouble for Unitarians, but the king later became a Unitarian, and now we're going to go back, and I'm going to take you to Romania and tell you some other stories about it, but that's the story of our hero. And what do you guys think? This happened on the 7th of July. It's really close to our Independence Day, but it was kind of like the Unitarian Church Independence Day, wasn't it? Do you think maybe we should celebrate that in our church and we should have a big festival and fireworks and something like that? I think so, too.
We could just drink for 3 days.
I brought my new laptop, which just had to go back and came back just late yesterday. I have on YouTube a Romanian church choir singing a beautiful little hymn, and if our technical genius convener can work that out sometime today, I would like to share that with all of you. We have to have Wi-Fi, though, because it's YouTube, and they won't let you download. And I can't figure that out by myself.
We'll pray to the Google.
Okay, can somebody sing
it? Thank you, Barbara. Oh, now in peace. We now collect our offering that makes all of this possible. Our featured speaker today, Dr. Laverne Baker, PhD from Wichita State in communication disorders, a good friend of the fellowship for many, although she told me to say not too many years, academic professor for 17 years, communication disorders in sciences, 4 years at K-State, director of the Gear Up program to encourage high school students to continue in post-secondary education, retired recently from USD 475 in May of 2011 after 7 years as a speech-language pathologist. And also well known in the local community for her embrace of Negro spirituals and for her series of performances. So a very multi-talented and effervescent young lady, as I might say. Please welcome Dr. Laverne Baker.
Steve Moore for that introduction. And I'd like to say I'm really happy to be here. I look out in the audience and I see I know lots of people. I'm so happy when I look out and I see that I know everyone. I go First United Methodist Church, but I know more people here than I do there. It's amazing. That's what I was telling Marilyn. I said, I know more people in the Unitarian Church than I do at the First United Methodist. So she said, well, you know where you belong. Okay, I'm excited about being here today. I was asked to talk in June, and my topic is spirituality in our everyday lives. And I'm just going to be informal and talk to you. I prepared a little message for you, and I hope that when I finish, I have given you something to think about in terms of how you want to react in your lives. Is this loud enough? Can you hear me now? Sometimes I don't speak loudly enough. Is that okay? But see, I have to get into it. Okay. All right. Well, I'll do that then. First, I'm going to give you a definition of spirituality. There is a lady, she's a doctor, and her name was Joan Borisenko, and she has a book, it's called A Woman's Book of Life, and I want to give you her quote on spirituality. She says, from a spiritual vantage point, our major life task is much larger than making money, finding a mate, having a career, raising children, looking beautiful, achieving psychological health, or defying aging, illness, or death. Then she goes on and she says, it's a recognition of the sacred in daily life. It's a recognition of the sacred in daily life, a deep gratitude for the wonders of the world and the delicate web of interconnectedness between people, nature, and things, a recognition that true intimacy based on respect and love is the measure of a life well lived. I want to talk to you a little bit about why I feel qualified to be up here to talk to you today. The first reason why is because of my age. I am 77 years old, and I just call that the arrogance of age. All of you that are 77 or older, raise your hands. See, isn't that wonderful? That's what you call the arrogance of age. We put so much emphasis on being young, but when we get that old, we have a right to say what we want to say. You have to listen. You don't have to agree with us, but that's our privilege, and that's what you call the arrogance of old age. We have lived this long, and we are blessed to be here. So you have to respect us, and you have to give us that honor and that privilege. So that's one thing that gives me credibility, is because I am 77 years old. I'll be 78 in August. Isn't that wonderful? Can't believe I lived that long. My sister turned 79 Monday, and I wrote her. I said, can you believe we're almost 80? We're almost 80. Do you realize that? Isn't that wonderful? The other thing that I like about myself is I have studied spirituality my entire adult life. And I look at myself, I'm always in the box. I'm always out of the box, not in the box. I'm always out of the box seeking further light. You know, in other words, I think that's what Unitarians are. You're not in the box, but you're out of the box seeking further light. And that doesn't mean that you don't believe what other people believe, but you just say there might be something more. And I want to be open to accept that if it is there. So I've always been one of those people that's out of the box seeking further light. And then I like to think of myself as a culmination of all the books I've read. I do read a lot, and I've read, as you have read a lot, you know, you are all a combination of all the books you've read. When I look at the books I've read, there's Eric Butterworth, Deepak Chopra, Scott Peck, you remember Scott Peck? And Marcus Berg, Joel Goldstein, Louise Hay, Sylvia Brown, and Carolyn Mayes, to name a few, and also I liked Elizabeth Gilbert. She had Eat, Pray, and Love, and also Cornel West and Toni Morrison, to name a few. So I am now a culmination of all those books and ideas that I've gleaned from all those people, just as you are, and we all read, and so therefore we are a combination of that. The last thing I think is because of my creativity. Steve told you that I've done concerts here in Manhattan. I've done 6, and we're getting ready for number 7 in September, and we'll let you know about it. The other thing is I'm also a poet. I've been writing poetry for as long as I can remember, and I'm going to intersperse some poems in my message today that I have written, and we have some copies of them if you feel like you would like to get a copy of some of the ones I use in my message. Now I'm going to tell you what we're going to talk about today. I say spirituality in our everyday lives requires that we, one, acknowledge our kinship with other people. 2, that we learn to monitor our positive and negative self-talk. And 3, that we use our communication skills to interact effectively with other people. So in order for us to have spirituality in our everyday lives, I think we have to do those three things. Let's look at number one. Deepak Chopra, who is author of about 50 books, but there's one called Path to Love, he says, there's no problem in the world that does not have a spiritual solution. He was on Oprah's show, and I love him. You know, if you know who he is, you know how handsome he is, and all of his books, and he's so well spoken. So that's Deepak Chopra. He said, "There's no problem in the world that doesn't have a spiritual solution." So we'll examine spirituality in our everyday life. First, we'll look at how spirituality in our everyday lives requires that we acknowledge our kinship with all people. And the first, to introduce that thesis, I will read one of my poems. This poem, to me, expresses the kinship with all people. And its title is called, "We Are Within Each Other." I am me, but within me is part of you. I am part of every tear you have cried and every joy you have shared. I am part of your fears, disappointments, and anxieties, and all of your hopes, dreams, and aspirations. I am part of everything you have been in the past and everything you will be in the future. I am me, and you are you, but part of each of us is in with each other. Donald C. Johansson was the person that found Lucy, and he wrote a book with Kate Wong, and it was called Lucy's Legacy. And he says, quote, "There are 6 billion people alive today, present on every continent and on every planet." And he says, "Some are tall, some are short, some are dark-skinned, others fair." And then his last statement is, "All are members of the same species, Homo sapiens." So that's my first statement to look at the relatedness or the kinship of all people. I say kinship implies that we're related. All peoples, races, and nationalities are related. People all bleed. They all walk upright. They have a brain. They have a heart. They have lungs. They got kidneys. And they have the same male and female genitalia. I say if humans weren't related, there would be no mating between the races. I was always thinking, like I said, it would be like a square peg in a round hole, you know, so that's what we would have. We wouldn't have all the different colors and all the mixings and everything, because we wouldn't be all the same. So I just feel like if we weren't related, you couldn't have sex together. I don't think it makes any difference about the class differences. You know, in our society, we think about class differences. We look at wealth. And it was fascinating. I listened to President Obama and Romney, and they always talk about the middle class. I don't hear them ever say that they're going to take care of the poor, you know, which is fascinating. They feel like the wealthy already have theirs, and everybody's talking about how they're going to try to help the middle class so they can stay in the middle class and look out for the middle class, but nobody talks about the poor people or the lower class, you know, because it's almost like they don't exist, you know, and I think that's really bad. But my point is, it doesn't make any difference what class you have, or whether you're rich or whether you're poor. We're all related. And I feel like if we acknowledge the spirituality in all human, then I feel like events like the Holocaust in Germany or the gassing of the Kurds by Saddam Hussein the massacre that happened in Uganda, or what's going on in Syria, if we felt we were related, those kind of events wouldn't happen. I mean, my feeling is you have to recognize the kindredness in all people. And if you do that, it requires that we treat people like they were part of our own personal family. If we treat people like we're related, like we're kissing cousins, and that we, then we're not going to be gassing them. We're not going to be killing them. We wouldn't have all these horrible things that are happening to people. So I think that we have to concentrate more on our similarities than our differences. When I first started working, I worked with children that were in Winfield State Training Center that were children that were severely retarded. And one of the first things I learned was it takes more intelligence to see similarities than it does to see differences. It takes more intelligence to see similarities than differences. The differences stick out, and we can automatically see that. But the similarities, you've got to look for them a little bit more, you know. So we have to work on that. Okay, one of the things that I found as a singer of Negro spirituals, it means that I'm looking at this music that was created by a group of people that could not read, they could not write, they had been brought over here away from their culture. So they were very simple people. But I love the words to those songs because they're so democratic, and they saw the relatedness and the kinship in all people. And I'm just going to read the words to you from just one song. It's called Come and Go With Me. And one verse says, there's love and brotherhood in that land. Love and brotherhood in that land. Love and brotherhood in that land where I am bound. Love and brotherhood in that land. Then it says, come and go with me. Come and go with me to that land. Come and go with me to that land where I am bound. Cory Booker, who is the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, was a speaker at Stanford University graduation in 2012. And he was so eloquent in his speech. And he stood up there and he talked, and his eyes were closed, and he was so passionate. And he says, people who get comfortable in spirit miss what they were created for. People who get comfortable in spirit miss what they were created for. So in order not to get too comfortable, we're going to examine the next aspect of spirituality in our daily lives. We're going to look at how we monitor or we don't monitor our self-talk. Now, I didn't have a poem for self-talk, so I had to write one. And this one is called Self-Talk. Self-talk. The silent communication that involves the inner dialogue where the individual talks to the self. Self-talk. The talk that goes on from the time of waking in the morning to falling asleep at night. Self-talk. The conversation of all thoughts and messages that go on in the brain in a solitary manner. Self-talk, the communication system that judges everything experienced, both positive and negative. Self-talk, the constructive or destructive labels which are used to ascertain good or bad feelings about the self. Self-talk, the internal system of silent communication that is used to develop spirituality and self-esteem. There is a woman who has written a book. Her name is Jennifer Rothschild. She goes around the country and she does women's workshop. And she's written a couple of books. Her book is called Self-Talk, Soul Talk, And another one is Me, Myself, and I, which is based on that book. And I'm in a study group now, and we're using that book, and that's where I learned about the concept of self-talk. And she says self-talk is the silent words we use when we talk to ourselves. And you've probably never thought about it that much, but there's a dialogue going on in your brain all the time, from the time you get up until you go to bed at night. She says everybody maintains a continuous, ongoing, silent dialogue or stream of self-talk of between 150 to 300 words a minute. Most of those thoughts are neutral or harmless and are grouped into 45,000 to 51,000 thoughts a day. Thoughts can be accurate or inaccurate, constructive or destructive, right or wrong, and from the thoughts that run through our minds, we draw truth or error, powerful, life-shaping beliefs that go on to influence both our feelings and our actions. I feel that listening to our self-talk is important because what we say to ourselves determines the quality of our self-esteem and our spirituality. Self-talk is the silent communication that tells us what we say about ourselves. It includes all of our positive and negative labels. And the labels are what we call ourselves. Everybody calls themselves labels. She called herself an idiot a lot. Or some people say they're stupid. Some people say, oh, that was so dumb of me. You know, it's the negative stuff that we say, what we call ourselves, and everybody does it. Nobody's exempt. Everybody does it. So you have to think about the labels that you call yourself, and you know what the scripture says, as a man thinketh, so you gotta be careful what you call yourself. Okay. And it determines whether we give ourselves positive or negative encouragement. You know, you have to train your self-talk to be positive. You know, it's like, oh, you can do that. I know I can do it. You know, I'm going to try to be better at that this time. So you want it to be positive, not discouraging. You know, that's your self-talk. We have to learn to monitor our self-talk, and you want to delete the negative talk and replace it with positive so you can become your authentic self. I love the word authentic self because that's who we really are, you know. And a lot of us hide. We don't really let who we really are open up and shine out. That's your authentic self, who you really, really are. Everybody is wonderful and beautiful because you are made that way. And so we have to be who you are and let that shine and be your authentic self. I think that our self-talk affects our spirituality and how we choose to grow as spiritual beings. All right, we have to make our self-talk positive so our spirituality will also be positive. We have to make the self-talk positive so your spirituality will be positive, how we express ourselves spiritually to be positive. There's a man called Dr. Wayne Dyer, and he has a cassette that's called There's a Spiritual Solution to Every Problem. It's a nice little cassette. And this is what he says. He says, becoming spiritual means trying to be a little bit better today than you were yesterday. And this can be accomplished through kindness, good cheer, unconditional love, forgiveness, feeling connected to the universe, and knowing that you are an infinite human being, unquote. So spirituality in our everyday lives requires that we use our communication skills to communicate effectively with others. And we're going to introduce that with my poem called Communication. Okay. Communication. I talk, but you don't listen. You listen, but you don't hear. When will you be able to listen and hear me in a way that I know we are communicating? We talk, but we don't listen. We listen, but we don't hear. Someday, we may be able to listen and hear each other in a way that we know we are communicating. How well we communicate affects all of our interpersonal relations with people. How we communicate with others influences our spirituality on a daily basis. I think that our communication interactions with others affects our ability to love. And I think being able to love others is being, you have to be able to love others unconditionally, and that's the most gratifying form of love. Unconditional love means you just accept people. Most of us have value judgments in accepting people, so you just have to just take everybody as they are, and that's unconditional love. And we need to be working on being able to accept everyone. When you meet anyone, wherever they are, you take them as they are, and you just accept them unconditionally. I think that's so important. Communication interactions with others also involves our ability to forgive. Dick Tibbetts has a book called Forgive to Live, and he says, a failure or inability to forgive creates an inner anger, sometimes observable, but often unseen. That affects our emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being, from broken relationships and cynicism that lead to isolation, to health issues that lead to a shortened life expectancy. And then we come to Matthew 18, 21, 22, when we go to there was one of Jesus' disciples, and his name was Peter. And he said, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? And he says, till seven times? And Jesus answered him and said, I say not unto thee until seven times, but 70 times seven. 70 times seven. And you know how hard it is when somebody has done something wrong to you and you have to forgive them. You can forgive them one time, but then you go away, you get mad again, and you have to go back and forgive them again. You don't just get over it. So I feel that learning to forgive is one of the most difficult skills that we have to learn in our interpersonal communication relationships with other people. We have to learn to forgive, and we have to do it 70 times seven. All right. The other aspect of communication, it reflects our ability to give and receive from the other. And I have one more poem for that called Giving and Receiving. It says, I can accept what you give me without feeling obligated to give back in return. I can accept what you give me without feeling obligated to give back in return. I can give to you without expecting that you give back to me. I can tell you what I want and ask you what I want with the knowledge that I am increasing our potential for sharing. Unobligated giving and receiving is a humanistic ritual for expressing the joy of love. Okay, giving and receiving demands that we learn to share what we have and be able to receive what others may give us. We have so much stuff. And I'm asking that you think about that and think how much of what I have could I give? How much could I share with other people? Look at your closets. Look at the stuff in your house. People, we have too much stuff. And there's people that have nothing. You know, so we need to learn to give and learn to share what we have, because we've been so blessed. You might not feel that way, but if you have it, then I think you've been blessed. And you ought to be able to just let it go. If you don't use it, and you're just hoarding it, and you just got it, then we need to look at that. And we need to freely let it go. Just give. Okay. Now, the last major component of our communication skills we'll examine is living with an attitude of gratitude. Living with an attitude of gratitude implies that we are thankful for everything. Living with an attitude of gratitude implies that we are thankful for everything. It requires that we be thankful for vision, hearing, speech, mobility, health, wealth, and all of our possessions. We were just talking about attitude of gratitude. We wake up every morning, we just automatically think that you're going to start talking. You open your eyes, you just know you're going to see, and you just think you're going to hear. But that's an attitude of gratitude. You don't have to, you know. In other words, you you got to be grateful. You have to be thankful for all. Think about it. People, we just take all this stuff for granted. But we must have an attitude of gratitude. Okay, living with an attitude of gratitude means we don't take anything for granted. We appreciate everything that comes to us. Yesterday, we had a birthday party for a lady that was 90 years old. Some of you may know her. Her name is Rosa Hickman, and she lives down on 8th and Yuma, and she's been there almost 90 years, and her family was there, and we were at Douglas Center, and we were celebrating this woman's 90th birthday. Attitude of gratitude. It was so wonderful. She appreciates every little thing that we give her. I mean, it's just so exciting to be around somebody with that kind of attitude. But the least little thing, last Tuesday I went to her. She said, no gifts. Well, I just feel like if you're 90 years old, you deserve something. So I took a little gift to her, and she was so happy. She was so appreciative of that. And it's just wonderful. People, you just can't do it too much. If somebody gives you something, you have to be appreciative and show that attitude of gratitude. Communication impacts all of our relationships with others and requires that we be able to love, that we be able to forgive, that we love and that we give and receive, and that we live with the attitude of gratitude. I feel that if we are to grow spiritually on a daily basis, we need to be cognizant of the way we communicate with others. Our purpose in life is to grow spiritually, but we won't grow if we don't learn to acknowledge the kindredness of all people. We're all related. Everybody is in your family. Monitor what we're saying to ourselves with our self-talk. What we say to ourselves determines what we are. It's in your brain. Your brain is talking all the time. Monitor the positive and negative thoughts that you have. Kick the negative thoughts out and replace it with the positive, so that you can be your authentic self. And we have to use our communication skills to interact effectively with other people. They had Dale Carnegie on Sunday morning, this morning on TV, and they were talking about how many had taken that course, and he wrote that book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's communication. And I was excited because it dovetailed right in with what I was talking about. So we want to watch what we say, what we do, and how we give and receive when we interact with other people. We want to work on our communication interaction with all of our friends. Thank you.
Anybody has any comments or questions, we'll bring the microphone around for you. Feel the.
You don't have to agree with me. Remember, okay.
My comment includes a question right here.
Okay.
When you are identifying the positive and the negative thoughts, would you say that it's also necessary to identify what is positive? So would you say that, do you say that the positive is a good, or how do you, do you define the good or the positive and what you're thinking, or is there some other way or method appreciating the positive or the good? It's kind of an open question.
I want to be sure I understand the question. The question is, how do I tell whether my communication in my self-talk mm-hmm. is positive or negative?
Okay.
Is that your question?
Okay. So the question that I have is, when we are positive.
Yes.
Okay, when we say something is good, then we say that it's positive.
Yeah.
So if you say something is positive, you're kind of identifying like a good, right? Something that's good. I don't know. So when you are having a positive or negative thought, would you say that you're identifying something that's good? It's kind of a philosophical question, I think.
Okay.
So if you would venture,
I'm not sure. I think what I hear you asking me, how do you tell the difference between your positive and your negative self-talk? Is that right? And I think you have to decide. If it's negative, it means like it's not good. If I say the way Ms. Rothschild, she'll do something and she said, "Oh, that was so stupid." She said, she'll say, "I'm so stupid," you know. And she's not. It was just a reaction and the way she acted. So you have to not let your negative self-talk lead you down. That's the way I think, you know. And you can get her book. It's called Self-Talk, Soul Talk. Her name is Rothschild. And she has another one, Me, Myself, and Lies. And she does it a little different. She talks about our closets in our lives. So that's how she distinguishes it. It's what we put in our closets. I don't like that concept, so I didn't use it. But that's my right. But I feel like you have to decide whether it's positive or whether it's negative. And if it's good, then we can use it. But if it's negative and it's tearing your self-esteem down, you know that's not good. That's where I would.
Laverne, I liked what you had to say a lot, but I was struck by one almost law of social psychology that I've observed over the years. It's the tendency of people to divide us versus them.
Yes.
Whoever us is and whoever them is. And you see that in little groups and big groups. You see it inside groups or between groups. You can see it in a country. This is where civil wars start. You know, within a country, all of a sudden there's an us versus a them. And the question is, how do we break down this us versus them business?
No, I agree. When I did this, I know how things are and how people are. We have classes. We have the wealthy. We have the poor. We have royal. We have the commoners.
we have things the way they are. And I guess I'm a dreamer.
You are, dear.
I'm a dreamer, yes.
That's why we love you.
I know, but I keep thinking, like, I love everybody, and I don't see differences in people. And I think we can all learn to do away with thinking that I'm better than somebody else. You know, it's not necessary, because we're all people. And I just don't know. You have a very good point, because you are talking about the way things really are, the way the world really are. Like Aurora yesterday, there's a lady that said, well, why do we all relate to what happened? And she said, because we're all empathetic. We're all people. We all relate to what happened in Colorado yesterday. It was terrible. And we can all cry because of the 12 people killed and the 70 people that were shot. And you can also cry for that poor young man. We don't know what went wrong, you know. So you are right. I agree with you. You have a question?
Well, I'm responding to the self-talk thing, uh-huh. I guess. Remember Virginia Satir, who was a famous psychologist,
used
to get up every morning and look in the mirror and say, I love you, Virginia. Yes. You're great.
Yes.
And that was her way of starting the day with positive self-talk.
Yes.
So anything you want to say about yourself that's positive, just keep saying it.
Another one is Louise Hay. She did that too. You know, here's one right here. Let me see what Kerman has to say. He has a question.
Oh. Hi, Laverne.
Yes.
Is this on? Yep. Yeah, okay.
Oh,
I used to be Charlie Kempthorne, remember?
I know, I did.
It's good to see you again. Wasn't your father Jesse?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm not 77 yet, but I'm old enough to have known your father when he was a younger man.
I thought we were the same age, weren't we? In class
I'm 74.
52?
I'm 74. Oh, no. You're the advanced age of 77. So, okay. What I wanted to say was something about negative, feeling negative and feeling positive.
Uh-huh.
And For better or for worse, I've spent most of my 74 years as a pretty negative person.
Yes.
And even though sometimes I tried to put the negative part of me to positive use. But then a few years ago, I made a sea change. And
mm-hmm.
and what so I relate very well to everything you're saying.
Uh-huh.
But I still have the negative self. And I wake up in the morning, and there's a kind of, I call it kind of a miscreant chorus of voices that goes off in my head, and damn it this, and damn it that,
uh-huh,
and
the
sun should have come up earlier or a little to the left or something, you know, just about everything. And then I remember, and I'm going to tell this quick little story about my second wife, not this lady, but the previous incumbent. When she would get up in the morning, she would chant. She would stand in the corner of the bedroom and dress all in black back then, even when it wasn't fashionable. And she would put on a black leotards or leotites or whatever they were called, and a sweater, and she would chant, everything is bad, nothing is good. Everything is bad, nothing is good. She would chant that for 2 or 3 minutes, and I'm still in bed looking over the sheets at her, wondering, what have I gotten mixed up with? But then she would dance. She was a dancer, and she would dance out to the kitchen, whistling and singing, and make me a great breakfast. Not as good as June's, but great. And I think that what she was doing, that's one thing I learned from that lady. I think she was sort of discharging the venom in herself. And I kind of look at myself that way when I get up, and I have all these voices bitching about life, and I get them out, listen to them, and then I go out and wash the dishes or look out and see the deer in the orchard or something. And anyway, so I'm just grateful for you, Laverne. And I loved Steve's very Unitarian definition of gratitude. Thank you, Stephen.
Yes, thank you. Okay. Do we have another question? Here's one. Oh, dear.
I am happy to be here from Wisconsin to hear you today. Two parts. One, I just wanted a name. Who was the person that you quoted originally who gave the definition of spirituality?
That was Dr. Joan Borisenko.
I'm going to get the spelling of that later.
She has a book. It's a beautiful book. It's called A Woman's Book of Life. And that definition was... That definition that is based on her... She deals with women and women's issues, and it's called A Woman's Book of Life. It's a thick book. It's a wonderful book, but you would enjoy her.
Okay.
She's done a lot of work with women.
Okay. The other thought that I had was about when you spoke to the authentic self.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And it occurs to me that so many of us at different times of our lives are broken.
Yes.
You know, the walking wounded. And how do you speak to the authentic self how can you be the walking wounded, the brokenness, recognize that brokenness and authenticity at the same time, because you spoke to what's positive and it's okay to be authentically broken.
Well, I can only tell you how I do it. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it has to deal with what your philosophical beliefs are. And I have to confess that I am a believer. And when I say I'm a believer, I do believe in the Bible. And because I am a minority and I've had to learn how to deal with that, the first thing that helped me was knowing that I personally am a child of God. And in the scriptures, it tells me that I am a child of God. And if I'm a child of God, it also tells us that we are royalty. So, see, if you don't believe in the Bible, you can't use that. But that's what I use, and I can only say that to you because that's what helped me. It helped me to know that if God made me, he made me brown, he made me, you know, what he gave me this intelligence. He gave me my talents. He gave me he made me this way. And so this is me. And if he made me, I'm okay. I mean, that's the authentic self. You have to have a way of knowing, you know, and mine is through my belief in God and a higher being. Now, when I say God, I don't mean some man that's sitting up there on a throne. I'm not going all that way, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, for me, I have to believe in something higher, a higher power, and that I feel that that's why we're all related. There had to be something higher that made us all, and he made you just the way you are, just with your height, your eyes, your hair, whatever. And he said, if God made you, he said, and that was good. And we have another saying, God didn't make you to jump. That's your authentic self. So you got to know you're okay. You know, that's how I do it. Thank you.
There will be some copies of Laverne's poems out on the table in the narthex afterwards. Our closing hymn, Stand As You Are Able, and join in number 315, This Old World.
Yeah.
So for me, I've learned two things. Your authentic self doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be real. And there are people who seek to separate you into groups. I think you should avoid those people.
Thank you.